It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kaysen. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kaysen.
A good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone who is listening on the internet on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. With me is Carrie Kaysen. No, actually, she isn't here with me. Another day, she is traveling around the country promoting her visitation bill in number of states throughout this union. She's been doing some great work, and she was with me the last few weeks. So that was nice when we had Bobby Kennedy Jr. on and Aaron Brockovich on. She was there. When we had Mark Garagos and Wendy Walker on, she was there. Today, though, she isn't here. So we wish her well, and hopefully she will be back very soon. About 3 weeks ago, we were in Rancho Mirage, California, for the annual California Applicant Attorneys Association Winter Convention, and we did a show live from Rancho Mirage, California, about workers' compensation. We featured some of the best attorneys in the state, some of the smartest people who represent injured workers, and a doctor and the executive director of the California Applicant Attorneys Association. And that association is the association that represents attorneys who represent injured workers. Applicants are injured workers, and that association is celebrating 50 years of serving the public and helping people advocate for the rights of people who are unfortunately injured on the job. That show was so popular from Rancho Mirage, where the convention took place. And by the way, I was the chair of the convention. It was a very successful convention. A lot of great ideas came out of that convention to help injured workers. And by popular demand today, our listeners have spoken. They have spoken. They want to hear more from the experts in workers' compensation and why there is a crisis and why it is impacting your pocketbook, whether you're injured or not. Why are people who are injured on the job not getting the treatment they need from the insurance companies who are contracted to provide the benefits to the injured worker? And why are the costs being shifted to the public sector? We are going to learn a whole lot about why this is a crisis, and I'm not trying to be dramatic here. It really is. When you hear from our guest today, you will understand why the government has thrown injured workers on under the bus and why, how it has caused worsening of conditions and how it has impacted the general population. There is a bargain, and the bargain is that insurance companies for workers' compensation will take care of those who are injured on the job in lieu of having the ability, the injured worker, to sue the employer. Now, who's holding up their end of the bargain? We're going to find out today. Now we have on the line Larry Silver. Larry Silver is with Goldschmidt, Silver & Spindell, and he is one of the well-known attorneys who spoke at the California Applicant Attorneys Association convention 3 weeks ago. Larry, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Great. We had a chance to talk to you when we were in Rancho Mirage, and we talked about some of the problems that people are facing when they get injured on the job. You have been very outspoken on the politics of this situation that we're dealing with. Tell us why workers' compensation seems to be such a hot potato when we talk about the political aspects of the legislation.
All of the laws and rules that regulate workers' compensation come from Sacramento, the state capital, in the form of state statutes, state laws, the entire system is regulated by the California Labor Code, which is the specific statute that deals with this system. And being a statutory system, it is created by the legislature. They are responsible for every single thing that happens in workers' compensation, and therefore all of the interest groups who make up workers' compensation have lobbyists in Sacramento who are pushing and pulling and trying to get laws that most favor their clients. Those groups are insurance companies, employers, Chamber of Commerce, medical groups, labor unions, attorney groups, et cetera.
So tell us how some of these groups have impacted the legislation and the erosion of the individual rights as far as injured workers go.
Well, there are some very large and powerful interests, some very large employer groups that have lobbied Sacramento very hard. And the most common ploy by all of them is to insert what's called average justice. So they always look at the system as a whole. Now, each injured worker doesn't look at the system as a whole. They look at it from their own personal injury story. But everybody's personal needs doesn't fit an average. But large companies like Disney, companies like that that are in Sacramento, they talk about averages and average justice. And especially since 1989, they have drastically changed this system to reflect more average justice.
So give people examples of how your theory of the average being prevailed upon in the legislature actually affects an individual who may not fit within that quote-unquote average theory.
Absolutely. So, for example, take medical treatment. It used to be that an injured worker could pick their own free choice treating doctor. Now, they still can if they're one of the very small percentages of people who pre-register the name of their doctor. And even though I've spoken to groups and probably handed out a million pre-registration forms in my career, very few people actually do it.
Right.
Which means that most people no longer can pick their free choice doctor. Most people have to treat in what's called medical networks. So just like with health insurance, where they have networks and you have to treat with the network doctor, workers' comp now has networks, and you have to treat with the network doctor. The network doctors are picked by the employer or insurance company. These are doctors who can be profiled, and so these doctors are always walking on eggshells, and they're very nervous about prescribing too much treatment.
Well, isn't that because that they can be cut from that roster at any time, losing the ability to see the injured worker, and, of course, their livelihood is impacted?
That's totally true. So the profiling or the ability to cut them from the network has all of these doctors anxious and nervous all the time. Now, if that's not enough, the next thing which they do, which is part of the average justice argument they make, is they limit even these own doctors that they've picked are limited by what's called utilization review and independent medical review, which I'm sure your prior guests have talked about a lot. But those systems of utilization review and independent medical review are based on guidelines, which again are based on averages. So if you are an injured worker and you have a type of injury where instead of 24 physical therapy visits, you need 48 physical therapy visits, you're out of luck because the average justice system says you can't have it. If you're the kind of person who needs surgery based on certain findings, but the guidelines say you need other findings, the averages work against you and you don't get your surgery.
People can use the laws, not the average theory, but the law of getting treatment to game the system by trying to, you know, the doctors, for instance, maybe they are going to be prescribing too much treatment. We hear that all the time. What do you say to that when people say, well, we have to use the average theory because otherwise the fraud will run rampant.
Yeah, that's what people said in the 1990s. But the truth was there were all kinds of dispute mechanisms in place at that time that used a combination of independent neutral doctors to resolve disputes and or going to court. And it worked much better in terms of all of this. There were ways that the insurance employer community could object to things. So that the overall result of that worked much better than this system.
And that was more objective, wasn't it? Because when you talk about a neutral doctor, you talk about a judge who we assume is going to be neutral to the extent that that judge is neutral. There still was the ability for both sides to prevent evidence, which is the underpinnings of our due process system.
That's absolutely true. And those were doctors who actually met with and saw and examined the injured worker. These utilization review doctors and these independent medical review doctors never see the injured worker. They never examine them. In my opinion, that's medical malpractice, and that's going to be the subject of probably one of your talk shows going into the future.
Right. Yeah, and that's definitely something that is coming in the future, because there are so many people who are being impacted by the lack of treatment. And you see it, I'm sure, every day in your practice where you want your client to get back to work, but they're just not getting the treatment or they're not getting the benefits that they need to be able to return to the job. What do we do under those circumstances?
Well, we need to change things, because I now have employers who are upset with this because their firefighters and their police officers cannot get back online to perform the safety needs that they do for the community because they can't get their treatment when they're injured. So it's really building as a crisis.
And you're an employer yourself, and you probably have some people who you feel are indispensable to you. And if they get, for instance, a carpal tunnel injury and they can't use their arms to input data, you need them back at work. And if they don't get the treatment, you're suffering as an employer.
Absolutely correct.
So,
want some other examples of average justice?
Go ahead.
So we've talked about treatment. Now let's talk about evaluations, which is when you get an expert to prove the level of your disability. Used to be you could pick your own expert. In every other area of law, a plaintiff can pick their own expert. Not here. You have to pick a doctor from a state panel. There are three doctors that are given off of lists of thousands of doctors, and each side eliminates one of the doctors, and whoever's the remaining doctor is the one who is your doctor on your individual case. Well, for insurance companies that think in terms of 20,000 cases, they just think that it'll all average out. That's average justice. But for the individual worker who gets a doctor who doesn't do a lot of workers' comp, or who's elderly and can't hear you when you're trying to explain your complaints, or who didn't read your medical records,
right,
or who did a scant evaluation of you because he was running behind in the schedule. There's all of these things that happen, and you get the short end of the stick. That's being a victim of average justice.
So what are we going to do? We have to wrap up. Tell us in the last minute that we have, how can we change the system so the individual is protected, and for those who get injured on the job, they can have the opportunity to get back to work and to be able to provide for their families?
Yes, there's all kinds of suggestions. Certainly, with regard to medical treatment, if you're in a medical treatment network, you shouldn't be subject to utilization review and independent medical review because you're already treating with their doctor. And these doctors should not be subject to this whole profiling system because they've already been handpicked to be on these networks. That would go a long way to providing better treatment for people. And they also should go back to the system where people can pick a qualified medical evaluator to be their expert in their case. I think if those things happen, it would go a long way to helping people.
And that makes a lot of sense, and it would cut down on the litigation. You and I both know that we're in court all the time, fighting these battles that should never take place. Larry Silver from Goldschmidt, Silver & Spindell in Los Angeles, I want to thank you again for coming on Gervie's Law, providing us with some important information, and hopefully some hope for the future for the workers' compensation system.
Thanks, Alan. It was my pleasure.
Okay, take care.
So we have to take a break now, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Breaking news coming into the KABC newsroom. I'm Lou Stowers. We're getting reports that Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia is dead at age 79 of natural causes. Scalia was apparently found dead Saturday at a luxury resort in West Texas, federal officials are saying. Scalia, who was 79, was a guest at a ranch, a big resort in the Big Bend area, and with some 40 other guests, did not appear for breakfast, and a person associated with the ranch went to his room and found a body there. Again, Anton Scalia, the longest-serving Supreme Court justice, is dead at age 79. I'm Lou Stowers in the 790 KABC newsroom.
The Patina Group New Company LLC is seeking a general manager for Cafe Pino in Los Angeles, California. Please mail your resume to 1150 South Olive Street, Suite TGL25, Los Angeles, California, 90015. Attention, Don Hernandez.
Looking to save money on Medicare Part D? Switch your prescriptions to Walgreens. With copays as low as $1, you could be looking at some real savings. And now you can preview the cost of your scripts before you fill with Walgreens' new Medicare prescription copay quote. And that's kind of a big deal. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Quote subject to change and available only for select Part D plans. $1 copay applies to Tier 1 generics.
Did you know? 1 in 50 people has a brain aneurysm. Every 18 minutes, a brain aneurysm erupts. Half of brain aneurysms result in death. Will it strike you or someone you love? The Brain Aneurysm Foundation is the globally recognized leader in brain aneurysm education, awareness, advocacy, support, and research funding. The Brain Aneurysm Foundation, raising awareness and ending fear. To learn facts at bafound.org. That's bafound.org.
Staying healthy is difficult. You've got health questions, I've got health answers. I'm Dr. Bob Martin. Tune into my show Sunday morning at 10, right after the Motorman. Sponsored by Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics and Chia Omega at finer health food stores.
Looking for the truth about medical and political controversies? Join Dr. Gregory A. Smith, producer of the hit film American Addict, for Truth, Medicine, and Politics every Saturday night at 9, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio
7790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yes, this is Alan Gervey, and we're on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're here with Gervey's Law. Kerry Kasem is not here today, and we are talking about the workers' compensation crisis in the state of California. And I was telling you that 3 weeks ago, we had the opportunity to do the California Applicant Attorneys Association convention in Rancho Mirage. There were about 1,200 attorneys and doctors who came to the event to talk about what's going on in workers' compensation. The event is sponsored by the California Applicant Attorneys Association, and the California Applicant Attorneys Association is the voice for the injured worker. They are an organization that is comprised of a number of attorneys who represent injured workers, and the executive director of the California Applicant Attorneys Association is Karen Locke. We were fortunate enough to catch Karen when we did our live remote from Rancho Mirage, and we have her on the line by popular demand. Karen Locke, welcome back to Gervey's Law.
Thank you, Alan. I'm glad to be here.
You know, Karen, when we were at the convention about 3 weeks ago, we talked about the purpose of the California Applicant Attorneys Association. Can you remind our listeners, and for those people who didn't hear that live remote, can you tell us what the purpose is of this organization that has been around for 50 years?
Well, after being with the California Applicant Attorneys Association for almost 30 years, I can tell you that our two main objectives are education and legislation and trying to protect the injured worker.
And what has the evolution of the California Applicant Attorneys Association been like since 1987 when you started as executive director? The times have changed. What have you seen that has changed with the organization?
Well, of course, the membership has increased as the attendance at the conventions have increased. What I have seen legislatively, this is just my own observation, is that it's a lot more difficult to get anything through the legislature.
Yeah, that's very true. And you talk about the membership. When you started, do you recall how many members, or maybe 50 years ago, did you look into the archives and find out how this organization started and where it is today with membership?
Well, the beauty of the organization, like I said, in Rancho Mirage, is that it was a very small number of men. There were no women in the organization at the time. They came together from the North and the South. And instead of saying, we're not going to talk, we're not going to share ideas, we're not going to do anything because we might lose our clients to our competitors, they put that above and beyond themselves, and they said, look, let's come together, let's share ideas, let's educate each other, let's do the best we can to get the best protection for California workers. Not just injured workers,
right.
California workers.
That's a good point. Injured workers and workers. There has been a lot to be proud of in the California Applicant Attorneys Association. Tell us personally what you feel most proud of after 50 years of this organization's life.
I honestly feel most proud of the fact that we had a dinner for our 50th anniversary, and out of the 30 presidents that I have experienced, there were only two that did not come back. Going forward, when we do have a lot of young people coming into the organization,
right.
I would like to hope that we can one day get people to understand how important these rights are for injured workers and how in 5 minutes your life can change if you get injured.
Yeah, and that's really important, and people don't understand it, do they? And the legislature doesn't understand it, and you're in Sacramento. You need to talk to people there.
Yeah, no, they don't understand it.
Keep up the fight. Karen Locke is the executive director of the California Applicant Attorneys Association, who are celebrating their 50th year of advocating on behalf of the injured worker. You know, we will continue the fight, and we rely on people like you in Sacramento to be the voice of the injured worker. Karen, thanks again for being on Gervie's Law.
Thank you, Alan.
And for those of you who are just joining us, we are talking about injured workers in the state of California. We're talking about the California Applicant Attorneys Association, and we had on here on our show Karen Locke, who's the executive director of California Applicant Attorneys Association. We all met approximately 3 or 4 weeks ago in Palm Springs, actually Rancho Mirage, and we did a show live from Rancho Mirage. Today, we are talking to some of the finest attorneys in the state who represent injured workers to find out what the heck is going on in workers' compensation in the state of California. And on the line with me now, we are privileged to have one of the elite members of the California Applicant Attorneys Association. He is a former president of the association. He's also the Eugene Marius Lifetime Achievement Award winner for all of his contributions to advocating on behalf of injured workers. He is a longtime member and the chairperson of the Amicus Brief Committee, Bill Herreras from Grover Breach, California. Welcome to Gervie's Law, Bill.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for the nice words.
Well, you know, it's easy with you because you have devoted a lifetime of helping injured workers. And now there seems to be this crisis that we've been talking about all day today. And I want to get some of your impressions. First of all, we know that you've been a longtime member of CAW. You're celebrating, is it your 50th anniversary as an attorney?
Yes, it is. Thank
wow.
you.
Congratulations. You and the Super Bowl are 50 years old, at least with your representation for injured workers. Now, tell us a little bit about your work with the Amicus Brief Committee, because that's a really important aspect of making law in the state of California.
Yes, Amicus comes from the Latin word friend. Our job as advocates for injured workers appear in appellate courts. As friends of the court, in other words, amicus. So we write briefs in support of injured workers regarding matters of statewide significance. So we assist the court in understanding the view of the worker regarding a particular appellate case.
So how do you get into the Court of Appeal? Because what we want our listeners to understand is that workers' compensation is an administrative system. It's not necessarily part of the civil system as we know it until such time as there is an appeal into the Court of Appeal from the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board.
Well, it's not easy. Every litigant has a right of appeal in California, but their first level of appeal is to the commission. In other words, a trial judge makes a decision, and there's a commission of seven commissioners appointed by the governor who review these appeals. Once they make a decision, then either party has a right to seek further appeal in the civil courts that hear all appeals from contract cases
right.
to civil injury cases to criminal cases. So they hear all appeals, and the granting of an appeal in a workers' compensation case is discretionary. In other words, unless they think the case is of significant legal importance, they don't have to hear the appeal. So it has to be a case of new impression, a case of important statutory interpretation, and that has an effect on the entire state of California.
You know, when we were in Rancho Mirage, you spoke at the convention of the California Applicant Attorneys Association. You talked about the most important cases that have come down over the last 6 months. Now, earlier in the year, we had Erwin Chemerinsky on the show, and then, of course, he's a constitutional scholar, and he talked about the important cases that the Supreme Court will be hearing this year. Tell us about a couple of cases that is in the channel for adjudication by the upper courts from the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board and what they mean to the workers of the state of California.
Well, the principal case is the Stevens case, and that's a case that involves independent medical review, a reform of the workers' compensation law that gives the administration the right to review decisions regarding medical necessity. And our dispute in this case involves a private corporation that hires physicians who are anonymous to decide issues of medical necessity for a worker, such as does the person need an MRI, do they need certain epidural injections, and they can reject or deny the request.
Bill, but I have a question, because you're talking about someone hiring this organization. Who hires, and why doesn't the injured worker have a say in who reviews their treatment requests?
Well, you have to understand that workers' compensation is totally statutory. In other words, whatever the legislature provides, that's what the worker gets. And in order to allegedly save money for employers and insurance companies, they establish a system that allows the administration, the government, the state of California, to hire independent, allegedly, medical evaluators.
Allegedly, right.
Allegedly. To review recommendations by the patient, that is the injured worker, private or treating physician. So that decision regarding a recommendation for an MRI or a surgery is denied by the insurance company, and then the worker's remedy involves an appeal to an independent medical reviewer who often simply rubber stamps the opinion of the insurance company's agent in denying the medical treatment. So our dispute is that that's not a fair, impartial evaluation that gives the worker the right to question the physician for the basis of their decision, their reasoning, their background, what kind of experience they have, and the physician remains anonymous, which we believe violates the Constitution and the right of due process, the right to present evidence, and the right to cross-examine this person who, in effect, denies a person's work injury.
Now, Bill, if the now is this going to go to the Supreme Court, first of all?
Well, it's pending in the Supreme Court now. The Supreme Court is reviewing that decision by the Court of Appeal that, in most part, approved of this process.
Now, if the Supreme Court hears it and it's reversed, what does that mean to the system?
Well, it gives a more open and fair opportunity for a worker to question the denial of medical treatment in front of an impartial judge, rather than leave it in the hands of unknown physicians and workers' compensation insurance adjusting agencies.
We're talking to Bill Herreras, who is an attorney with the law firm of William Herreras, actually, in Grover Beach, California. He is a longtime member of the California Applicant Attorneys Association. Bill, we only have a couple minutes left. Tell us what you see in the future in workers' compensation. Regardless of what happens in Stevens, how are things going to be turned around so individual rights are protected when you get injured on the job?
Well, there's a recent case that allows a worker to take legal action against these unknown physicians who deny treatment to workers. It's called a King case, and in the King case, a worker suffered severe consequences as a result of being removed from his medication regime, which caused him to suffer a stroke, and he was allowed to pursue a malpractice case against the physician who failed to follow a standard of care in reducing the amount of medication over a period of time.
So that seems like a no-brainer to me, though, Bill, because if someone is actually a doctor is serving to deny treatment, isn't there a relationship there between the physician and the patient, notwithstanding the doctor hasn't seen the person?
Absolutely. There's a physician-patient relationship. That's long been the law in California. However, the other side thinks that simply because they make recommendations, it doesn't affect the worker. But when a physician makes a medical decision that denies certain medical treatment that has an adverse effect and falls below a standard of care, that physician should be subject to adjudication and a jury trial and a damage claim that is caused by the neglect or failure to meet
right.
a standard of care. So,
and Bill, so we just have to close it now, but I just want to ask a question because you know this stuff like the back of your hand. Is there any reason for workers, for injured workers and their families to have some sort of optimism as we move forward in 2016 and beyond?
Gosh, I hope so. That's like asking me, will the stock market turn around?
Let's not talk about the stock
market.
Yeah,
let's hope that that's the case. I mean, the people have to go to their legislators and let them know how they've suffered as a result of these draconian decisions by their legislators and, unfortunately, by the courts.
And not only that, people have to talk about the cost shifting where injured workers are not having their benefits provided by the insurance companies who are getting these huge premiums, and that it's ending up costing the taxpayer more money, and the insurance companies are sitting back laughing, in my view anyway. That's a personal editorial. I don't think you'll disagree with that, will you?
No, I do not.
All right. Well, let's leave it at that. Bill Herreras, thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law. Wish you all the luck in the world as you continue to fight the good fight, and may the injured workers have the benefits that they need and are entitled to in the future. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for sending the message out. We appreciate it.
Take care, Bill. Okay. So we have to take a break now, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I'm Lou Stowers in the KABC newsroom, and we're getting reports and confirmations that Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia is dead at age 79, and there is an investigation into his death. The 79-year-old jurist was found dead at a resort in Texas, and that was called the Luxury Resort in West Texas there. And according to reports, Scalia arrived at the ranch on Friday and attended a private party with about 40 people, and he did not appear for breakfast. A person associated with the ranch went to his room and found the body. Chief U.S. District Judge Orlando Garcia of the Western Judicial District of Texas was notified about the death from the U.S. Marshals Service. So once again, Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia has died at age 79 of natural causes. I'm Lou Stowers in the 790 KABC newsroom.
If you can't see the difference, why pay the difference? Switch to Dish and see what real value is. Call 877-319-6988. You can also save a bundle when you combine DishNet high-speed internet with your TV service. Call 877-319-6988. Programming starting as little as $29.99, plus access to thousands of movies and TV shows. Stream to your TV, smartphone, or tablet. Call 877-319-6988. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get Dish today.
This Sunday, February 14th, is the second Sunday of the month, and it's Valentine's Day at the Rose Bowl Flea Market, this Sunday at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Bring your own special Valentine and see 2,500 vendors offering their wares. Antique radios, Victrolas, glass, toys, signs, statues, games, cards, lamps, furniture, collectibles, all types of great room decor, new merchandise, arts and crafts, vintage clothing, and lots more. The place to find the rare, the unusual, the bizarre, and one of a kind. Whether you come to buy or just browse, it's just good old time fun for the whole family. This Sunday at the Rose Bowl Flea Market in Pasadena, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Search the rows and rows of treasures for all the best and unique and special Valentine deals. This Sunday at the Rose Bowl Flea Market at the Rose Bowl Stadium in Pasadena, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Special early preview admissions and free or preferred VIP parking available. For more information, go to rgcshows.com. Produced by RG Canning Enterprises, Inc.
Looking to save money on Medicare Part D? Switch your prescriptions to Walgreens. With copays as low as $1, you could be looking at some real savings. And now you can preview the cost of your scripts before you fill with Walgreens' new Medicare prescription copay quote. And that's kind of a big deal. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Quotes subject to change and available only for select Part D plans. $1 copay applies to Tier 1 generics.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I am Alan Gervie, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm a little under the weather today, and it's a good thing that it's not a workers' compensation injury, because I'd probably never get the cold medication that I need, or at least I'd have to wait about 4 months, and by then my head may have exploded. We are talking the crisis in workers' compensation in the state of California. And right now, Gervie's Law is honored to have with us one of the preeminent injured workers' attorney in the state, Ron Feinberg from Rose Klein and Marius. Ron, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Good to be with you, Alan.
It's great to have you. Now, 3 weeks ago, we were all in Rancho Mirage, California. We were at the Applicant Attorneys Association Convention celebrating 50 years. You are a former president of that organization. When we look at the state of workers' compensation today, how does that compare to when you were president way back when?
I think the major change has been legislation and resulting case law that limits access and selection of medical providers to the injured workers. The control over your own body, the injured body, has now been shifted away from the injured person into the hands of the employer slash insurance carrier.
Don't we have First Amendment rights? Aren't individual rights being violated if an individual doesn't have the right, as you're talking about, to get the treatment that he or she needs and is entitled to?
I would agree with that. That's been advanced in appellate law by attorneys for injured workers, has not been very well received by the courts. The employer community and the insurance community repeatedly run to Sacramento urging cost control. And in
cost
their efforts
control
to do so, Sacramento has chosen.
Wait a second here. You're talking about cost containment. Why should cost containment be on the minds of the legislatures versus individual rights?
I think Sacramento is more interested in at least giving the perception of California being employment-friendly. There is a perception, not a reality, that businesses are driven from the state of California or choose not to come into California because of liberal or historically liberal workers' compensation law focused more on the injured party as opposed to maintaining the rights of the employer. So over the last 20, 25 years, there has been a continuing protection directed to the employer community and to cost contained certainly in the medical arena and to minimize indemnity benefits to injured workers in the name of advancing business interests in California.
So business,
the net result is that injured workers pay the price.
And business interests are prevailing over the individual's interest. Now, you talk about a history of perceived liberal construction of the workers' compensation system. Now, I know you represent a number of National Football League, NFL players in their workers' compensation claims, and they are workers, so they are entitled to workers' compensation claims. But hasn't that eroded the ability for an injured NFL player to file a claim on a continuous trauma basis, meaning over the period of perhaps their career, to file a claim in the state of California?
Absolutely. Again, a compression of injured worker rights. Unfortunately, almost daily, the media is reporting brain trauma injuries to primarily retired National Football League players. There's a latency period, and then later in their lives, but still early in their lives, retired players are starting to exhibit very severe phases of dementia and ultimately and sadly pass away from dementia. Now, many of these players performed their work within the borders of the state of California, and historically, California has said, we will take care of people who work within our borders and who get hurt within our borders. But because of the drama and controversy around athletes in California, and the many athletes who play in California but play for teams domiciled outside of California, Sacramento has gone ahead and dramatically restricted the quantity of exposure in California before the California courts will grant jurisdiction over those claims.
Right.
So the net effect is, yes, without quantifying it, these players are getting hurt within the borders of the state of California, but if it's not significant or substantial exposure, these players are not having the opportunity to pursue their claims here in California,
right,
notwithstanding the fact that they got hurt in California.
Yeah, and we're talking to Ron Feinberg. He's with Rose Klein and Marius, injured worker attorney in Los Angeles. And you talk about the effects of playing football, and we talk about what's called a continuous trauma. Why are there so many people now coming out against having continuous traumas as part of workers' compensation injuries when it is known medically that people on a repetitive basis, when they are doing their work, whether it's playing football or typing at a keyboard, do suffer injuries as a result of continuous work?
Interestingly, California still does have a cumulative trauma statute, which is good, even though it's being whittled away. There are only about 8 or 9 states in the whole country that still maintain cumulative trauma law on their workers' compensation legislative books. Employers who, again, have tremendous power and ever-increasing control – have a very difficult time digesting the fact that continuous conduct is injurious. And the reason they have the primary reason why they have the most trouble in accepting that concept is that workers' comp is a no-fault system.
Right.
And civil defense doctrines such as comparative negligence and assumption of the risk do not exist in workers' comp in any phase.
You know, Ronnie, can you imagine if they did exist, the amount of litigation that would take place between an injured worker and an employer would just be so cost prohibitive. So this bargain.
Exactly. And people don't understand that the historical reason for workers' comp is to protect employers from exactly what you just suggested. It is a legal concept, a socioeconomic concept, which allows the employees to enter the system, but for restricted, limited purposes, rights and benefits.
Right. We have to close this up really quickly, but I just want to find out in one word or less, which is very hard to do, are we in crisis? Is California in crisis in the workers' compensation system?
Injured workers are in crisis in the California workers' compensation system.
Very well put. Last question, really quickly. What can we do? And I know that will call for an expansive answer, but what can we do to fix this problem?
People have to reach out to their state legislators and bring to their attention how unfair and unjust the current laws are, and urge Sacramento to revisit the subject and realize why this system was created in the first place and who we're trying to help and protect so that we have a viable economic system in the state.
Right. Words of wisdom from Ron Feinberg, from Rose Klein and Marius. Hopefully people will heed your advice. Thanks for being with us again. We enjoyed seeing you in Rancho Mirage at the convention, and thanks for being on Gervie's Law today.
My pleasure, Alan.
So we have to take a break now, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Breaking news from the 790 KABC newsroom. I'm Lou Stowers. U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia has died at age 79. Scalia apparently died in his sleep last night during a visit to Cibolo Creek Ranch Resort in West Texas, according to federal officials. Scalia went to bed Friday night telling friends he wasn't feeling well. When the longest-serving justice on the bench and the first Italian-American to serve on the Supreme Court didn't show up for breakfast this morning, the group he was with left for a hunting trip without him. And earlier this morning, someone at the ranch went in to check on Scalia in his room and found him unresponsive. In a statement, Chief Justice John Roberts said he and other justices were saddened to hear of Scalia's passing. For more information, go to KABC.com. Again, Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court Justice, has died at age 79. And for more information, go to KABC.com. I'm Lou Stowers, 790 KABC News.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-471-9807. That's 1-800-471-9807. 1-800-471-9807. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors not available in all states.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
On the line with me now is one of the most well-known agreed medical examiner doctors in the system in workers' compensation. His name is David Glazer. He's a doctor, a psychiatrist, and he's with Glazer Forensic. Dr. Glazer, welcome once again to Gervie's Law.
Alan, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Dr. Glaser. And I know you have been right in the trenches in dealing with this crisis where people are not getting treatment that they need. And from a psychiatrist's perspective, it's really important, as far as a slippery slope goes, that people get treatment, whether it be for a physical or emotional injury. What has been your experience dealing with workers' compensation patients from that perspective?
First, in the workers' compensation system compared to the private sector, the quality of treatment, if it does occur, and oftentimes it doesn't occur, in the private sector, it would be medical malpractice. I see workers more often than not angry, demoralized, frustrated. That alone makes their depression worse. And what happens more often than not is the treatment either is never instituted or treatment is instituted late, and when treatment in anything in medicine is instituted late, there is a less likely positive outcome. This has been documented in the literature, in psychiatry. You intervene with an antidepressant 3 years after the onset of the depression, there's a decreased chance of response to the antidepressant.
Very interesting.
This is a terrible situation for the injured worker because everybody loses, Alan.
Dr. Glaser, now, I know that you look at things from an objective basis, and obviously some people are hurt worse than others, and some are, you know, maybe not as injured. However, isn't it true that we should be focusing on those people who need help and try to get them back to work? I mean, whether you're on the defense side or the applicant side, the whole purpose of the workers' compensation system is to try and get people in a place where they can be contributing members of society. And you've just indicated that in the public sector, it's easier to get the treatment than it is in workers' comp. How is that going to further our goal of getting people back to work?
Well, Alan, if I might use an orthopedic case.
Sure.
Here's a fact. It is well known in medicine there is a worse outcome before surgery if you have a depressed person. After a bad outcome in surgery, if the injured worker is depressed, they don't participate in their own recovery, think physical therapy, there's a decrease in critical brain chemicals, and actually there's an increase too. There's an increase in inflammatory chemicals called cytokines. And cytokines alone are depressogenic. There's a decrease in endorphins. People know about endorphins. Individuals don't feel as well. There's pain. Pain alone is depressogenic. It shows up in scans now. People are on opiates. Opiates alone can make depression worse. They'll certainly impair a person's cognition, so everyone loses. The injured worker suffers. They suffer more and more, and if they suffer, they're less there as a husband, they're not present as a father, their identity as a worker is chipped away at,
right.
And everyone loses. That's my theme.
So,
everyone loses.
So when you talk about these interesting points, you're actually indicating that there are objective tests that can be done to determine whether a person has suffered a decline mentally, psychiatrically, emotionally, which is contributing to the overall problems, the overall disability. That being the case, have you seen examples of injured workers who may not have received treatment immediately or right away in order for them to get better, and then you see them a few years later and they've totally decompensated into a situation where they're not employable anymore?
Well, Alan, this happens more often than not. When I see an injured worker, there's a dispute. When there's a dispute, that has been going on for a while. During this dispute, the worker himself or herself is not getting the treatment they need. They get worse. Their brain chemicals, as I mentioned, go up, they go down. The depression invariably gets worse. And when they're not receiving treatment, not only do the workers become angry, but the family gets angry.
Right.
And so all of this